Looking for a job isn't easy. It used to be that you could apply at a big name tech company and build a great career for yourself. But times have changed. Many of these companies have gone full woke. And if you aren't the right gender, ethnicity, you don't use pronouns, or if you're not an activist for the preferred cause, then good luck. Why would you risk your career on that? At Red Balloon, we're connecting good employees with top quality companies that value you for your skills and your work ethic, not your social activism score. Employers who post jobs on Red Balloon are focused on creating an enjoyable and productive work culture, free from divisive woke mandates. So if you want to find a serious career path without the nonsense, come to Red Balloon and post your resume today. Because you shouldn't have to choose between your job and your values. That's redballoon.work, where you can find your future.
Again, it's quite remarkable that we're now living in a society where we are branded as hateful. We are branded as evil people, as bigots, because we're saying, hey guys, we should not groom and sexualize children.
Everybody, Michael Thiessen here, and today I get to speak with a good friend, Mr. Samuel Say. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well, sir. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. Everybody, as we enter into our dialogue today, Sam and I are going to bring up a topic that's near and dear to our hearts. It's tradition whenever Sam comes on the show, and that is that we spend part of the show talking about Survivor. Now, as we get started, everybody, you need to understand that we're not talking about the American Survivor this episode. You're actually talking about Survivor Australia episode, their season 2023. I think it's their season 10. And I was walking along the road one day. It was a bright, sunny afternoon. And I got this text from Mr. Say, who said, Mike, you have to watch Australian Survivor. This season is amazing. So everybody, if you're not Survivor fans, we understand that. If your sensitive hearts are concerned about how people are interviewed and talk about other people, we understand that. But Sam and I find it fascinating how people navigate these social opportunities or these social situations in a game. And so therefore, it must be talked about. So Samuel, I watched the last episode last night. We don't necessarily have to give everything away if people are going to go out and binge watch Survivor Australia right now. But what are some of your takeaways from this season of Survivor Australia in the context of maybe a Christian framework, a Christian worldview, or just as a fan?
Well, one, I'm so glad that you and I haven't really talked about it, but it seems like you were really enjoying the season as well. I know you're a fan, and I just knew that you would love it as well too. And I've been watching I've been watching it back when they first started Survivor Australia. I only watched it because I was curious about it. Some friends of mine who are Survivor fans also said, hey, Sam, check out Australia, the Australian version. You might enjoy it. And I'm thinking, whatever, you know, I don't know if I'm really going to enjoy it. But I watched it and I was hooked. It is, I think it's significantly better than the American version, especially this season. What I enjoy about this season is it's sad that it's come to this, but it's really just because it's not woke. I mean, it's not the only reason, but it's a big reason. It's not really woke. They're not trying to appeal to the woke mob. They're really just trying to show people, as you said, in these situations and how really just human nature. How are people going to react to certain scenarios in a game where you have to be the last person standing? What are you willing to do? Is it going to be by trying to be a good person, quote unquote, to win the game? Or are you going to be a ruthless, horrible person that will backstab and betray everyone in order to win. It's a fascinating thing about human nature. It's fascinating to see how people radically change who they really are from the outside world when they are in Survivor. It's also fascinating to see some politicians who are very much like, they are very much like what you would expect a politician to really act like in the game of Survivor. I'm trying not to give too many things away, but it's fascinating. And as a Christian, I think about, okay, how would I react if I wasn't in that environment? What would be the right thing for me to do here? Because it is a game. In this game, is lying really lying? Is it sinful? Is betraying a friend and an alliance member, is it really sinful? I'm fascinated by all these things as I'm watching it. But my favorite player in Survivor history, in the American version, is probably Tony. I don't know how to say his last name, Vlachos or Vlachos. He's won it twice, and he's absolutely brilliant. George, without going into detail, George is one of them. Because I watched his previous season that he was on, which was season 8. And I couldn't stand him. I thought this guy is just annoying. I won't say too much more than that. But then he grows on you because he just loves the game. He wants to play. You know, his catchphrase is glory or death. And I love it. I love it. So anyway, those are my initial thoughts about Survivor. What about you?
I think for me, Survivor shows, when we're talking about human nature, I think Survivor shows how readily we do change. Like, whether you like the concept of watching that, whether you like the concept of framing it as a game, there is no doubt that humanity is, we change like shifting shadows. And I was thinking about that this morning. I wasn't trying to be overly theological about it, but in the last, you know what it's like. You and I've talked over the last 3 years. I was just listening to a podcast this morning where the podcaster was talking about it. I was actually listening to a Michael Knowles podcast, and Michael Knowles was saying, isn't it just absurd that you can have vegans who don't want to eat meat for the fear of the chicken who will then go and murder babies?
Yeah.
And so I think for me, once you get past it's just a game and I am observing a game and these people have agreed. So in one essence, it's not true lying, because they've all agreed that they can do it together. You know, if you and I play a game of poker, we've all agreed that part of the game is I'm allowed to bluff, and part of the game is I'm hiding my cards. I keep my cards close to my chest. And then the other part of the game is the tell. Am I figuring that out? So if we both go into the game and agree, it's not like I've really, Samuel, if I had a pair of sevens and you thought I had a pair of aces and I played you like I had a pair of aces, just because you assume, it's not really the same in any respect as I was telling a legitimate lie to one of your children, you know, dad, is that going to hurt? And you say no, and you know full well it's going to hurt or something.
Yeah.
So if you get past that and you're observing Survivor, I think the thing that always I always learn is, again, people are shifting sand, and I don't like that, but they are. And so you have these people who are villains who then try to be heroes, and you have heroes who try to keep the persona of a hero, but then they end up being villains. So this season, one of the biggest proponents of being a hero ended up at the end really trying to sell himself as a villain, and nobody bought it. And so you're just like, wow, that guy who the whole game was, I'm going to be loyal, I'm going to be honest, I'm not going to do anything. His entire pitch to the jury was the opposite to that. And so I think that I learn every single time, wow, we are shifting sand. I don't know if I could play. I don't know if we're at that stage where Christians can actually play and feel like they're virtuous at the end of it, but it certainly teaches me how people change.
That's a great point. You know, you mentioned, so this season's theme was heroes versus villains. And you're right. It's very interesting how, well, one, there's no real such thing. I mean, obviously in the Game of Survivor, we have the concept of a hero, but there's no real heroes in there, right? They're all one way or another betraying the other. So for example, the one person you mentioned who was trying to portray himself as a hero, well, you know, one of his arguments is, well, if I have the right guy in mind, are you referring to that? Well, I betrayed my initial alliance to join the other. But the issue is that everyone really does that in the game. You cannot stick with just one alliance. You really can't. You can maybe be faithful to one alliance more than the other, but you're always really going to make side deals that you may not really want to hold to, because you do so to help you advance in the game. But it's really interesting too, because the view that if you are willing to do anything in terms of strategy wise, really, if you are a strategist, that's what really makes you a villain in the game. That's really what they mean when you are a villain. It's that you are going to be so committed to your strategy that even if someone that is in your alliance, you think they might betray you in the future, but you do it before they do it, that makes you a villain. But I would say, well, no, that really just means you're a more effective strategist than the other person, because you got them out first. But what you're saying too about just how we're all, I think you phrased it as shifting sands. Is that how you phrased it?
Or shifting shadows, like that's, you know, out of the book of James, you know, the Lord is not like shifting shadows.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That's a great way to describe it, because, you know, I think it was Mike Tyson who said the infamous phrase that everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth, right? So you can go into Survivor thinking, and you've seen this many times, where everyone thinks, I'm going to be the social person, which basically means I'll be the one that everyone likes. I don't betray anybody. I'll be the good person. I'll be very friendly, all that. You can have that plan. We've seen it so many times. But then you realize that, wait a minute, I'm in the outs. I'm probably about to go home. And then you think about, you've already sacrificed so much time with your family. We had some people this season whose wives were pregnant and they left. And you're thinking, I'm here for the sake of my family. And if I go home, what was the point? So therefore, I need to do whatever I need to do in order to go further in the game. So you come into the game with one mind, but then you end up having to change your mind. And really, it is very much true oftentimes in our society that we are always reacting to new information, and it takes immense integrity. Whether it's new information, new enemies that you wouldn't think you'd ever have, and then how do you maintain integrity? How do you maintain the real goal when that is happening? But of course, in the Game of Survivor, it's just you get voted home. In real life, the consequences can be much worse. You can be losing your actual job.
Well, I like how you went into the real world there for a minute, because that was my other thought. You know, the more that I enjoy the game, the more I am thankful that that's not the way that God has designed the world. It's not outwit, outplay, outlast. Mm. And there's only one person left. Like that's actually really a very, like, the game itself is a very, the strongest survive. It's very evolutionary. It's very individualist. Yeah. Like it on one hand, the game's absurd in the sense that everybody knows it's a game. And like you said, they're just getting, and on the other hand, it is an overarching state that would actually force humans into that type of real environment in the world. Like, you conform to the mob group in order to survive. And I'm very thankful. I think that's the tension. People enjoy it and they go, I don't want to go out and be a survivor at work next week. I don't want to be a George at work next week. I hope there's nobody like George at work just trying to plot my demise. And yeah. The beauty of that is that's not the way that God has designed the world. We're actually, we flourish in families. We flourish in societies. We only really curtail, you know, freedom is limited to curtail evil. And evil is ultimately very damaging. And so I think that's just the other reason why I find it so fascinating. It's just a game and it's not reality. And I'm thankful that God did not create the world that way.
Hey, friends, I'm happy to talk to you again about RockLink Investment Partners. With inflation at 40-year highs and economic stagflation on the horizon, growing and preserving your hard-earned capital is of utmost importance. I know it's on my mind. And that's why RockLink Investment Partners are so essential, because they understand the investment challenges of today. RockLink is an independent investment management firm focused solely on creating portfolios of high-quality businesses anchored to the time-tested principles of value investing, and they do not shy away from essential businesses that do not meet the World Economics Forum's definition of ESG. So email RockLink at info@rocklink.com, that's RockLink with a C, or visit them at www.rocklink.com. And again, that's Link with a C.
You know, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because you're right. That is not how God created the world, but that is how Satan wants the world to be.
Yeah.
That is how a lot of evil people in our society think the world is, or that's what they're trying to get the world to be like as well too. So for example, again, not to maybe go too in depth or too deep, but the whole game, as you mentioned, is survival of the fittest, which also means, in a sense, in the game, there are always two different kinds of people. You have the person on top, the leader controlling a group, and you have someone at the very bottom, right? You always say, who's captaining the ship, right? Was a big theme. And who is at the bottom? Who's about to get thrown off from the ship? Well, a lot of people in our society, woke people, that's really how they see the world, which is why they do the things they do. That there's always somebody that needs to be at the top that needs to get rid of somebody else, because if they don't, then that person at the bottom will get rid of them. So for example, let's get into what's happening in the world today, for example, with the trans issue. They believe they are at the bottom in our society. And the only way they can be at the top is to get rid of the people at the top, which would be anybody who's not transgender, or especially Christians. So that's why you actually have what happened in Nashville, in that if you are oppressed, if you are a victim of an oppressor, your only way out of the bottom, your only way out of being an oppressed minority is to get rid of the oppressor. And that is that very Marxist view, right? It is that in order to end oppression, in order to end the bourgeoisie class, you need a violent revolution. And the Game of Survivor is really much, it's really that. You need to get rid of the leader. Then you can be at the top.
Where in the real world, if you are on the bottom, let's say, the way up is many different pathways. So one of the ways up to the top is virtue, where you cannot rise to, and when we say the top, so let's even get rid of that terminology, rise to health or rise to wisdom or rise to flourishing, right? The way you do that is through virtue, and virtue in a number of different areas in your life. You don't have to get rid of anyone in order to become a person who can enjoy this world. In fact, it's the opposite. You have to replace the people you think on the top and submit to God. And then his ways are, there's many different ways for you to flourish. And you need that to be tethered to the Lord in that sense, but you don't have to be in opposition to a people group in the sense of eliminating them. And folks don't realize that you know, if someone says, look, you guys are talking about it and you're giving an example already of exactly what it's like. You're saying you both would agree that transgenderism is wrong, that men cannot become women. So you're already oppressing them. And the distinction is that the critical theory and the Marxist theory wants to go out and eliminate the opposition. And the Christian worldview is we want to win the opposition so they join us and are freed. It's a very different way of treating it, even though on the surface we recognize there's conflict. So in Survivor, you're not trying to get the whole majority to be persuaded to be with you so that you can then go walk off into the sunset and enjoy lattes and build families and have this wonderful vision. You're trying to get rid of them because you think I've got to be the only one left standing. And that's what the woke mentality really does. So both include conflict. The goal is vastly different.
That's a great way to explain it. It reminds me of how I describe the difference between us believers and woke people, which is woke people want to coerce us into adopting their view. We want to convince them to adopt our view. We are trying to persuade them. We are preaching. Whereas woke people, it is you either agree with us or since you are hateful, you deserve to be punished either through in death or through canceling you from society. So the way you explain it, I think, is extremely helpful.
So how do you feel about what's been going on in New York City with the indictment of Donald Trump? So you and I are both living in the U.S. for a time right now. Obviously U.S. politics always affects Canadian politics, U.S. news. I'm sure you come across this, but just Americans just have no idea how much American content Canadians consume. So every Canadian likely knows as much about this indictment as anyone in the U.S. So that means everybody's got opinions about it on both sides of the border. What are your thoughts so far? Just so everybody knows, on Tuesday, New York prosecutors charged former President Donald Trump with 34 felonies, and they employed a law that can turn a misdemeanor into a felony if the misdemeanor took place while carrying out another crime. So the entire charge or the entire group of charges that former President Trump is facing have been turned into felonies when they would normally just be misdemeanors, because they're saying that he committed these things while committing another crime. And so up until this point, those 34 felonies, by the way, are 34 instances of the same thing. So it's just multiple payments involved in one situation. And then also up until today, we haven't heard what the other crime is. There's very little explanation about what that is, leaving everybody trying to figure out what that is. So people are trying to, Samuel, I think people are trying to figure out what's going on. And let me frame this conversation in a way that kind of pigeonholes us both. So I think you and I are both sick and tired of politicians getting away with murder. Like, I think your average citizen is just tired of saying, Canada would say, well, is Justin Trudeau ever going to get charged for any, there's an ethics violation out there. There's the enactment not the War Measures Act, but the Emergency Measures Act, the new title for it. There's just allegations of corruption, and people go, why do politicians always get off scot-free? And they're tired of politicians getting off scot-free. And then there seems to be what's going on here in the U.S., this dangerous, very partisan trial of a former president. So how do you react to that?
Yeah, there's so many layers to this, but I will try to keep it within the framework and how we're going to address this issue, which is, so we all acknowledge that Trump is a deeply immoral man in many ways. In terms of, he's rejecting it, but it's very believable that he paid off that woman that he allegedly slept with. The issue is the charge is incredibly flimsy. You've had so many people, I'm forgetting exactly who, I think the Supreme Court even was looking at this originally. I could be wrong about that. But I know that you've had, I think, two different instances of the law looking at this, and then they're saying there wasn't enough evidence to really charge him. It's extremely hard because this charge has to do with also motive as well, too. It has to do with, did he use campaign funding to actually pay off this woman? How can you really figure that out? But nevertheless, the issue is, even if he is guilty of a crime, as you suggested, this is not exactly abnormal for a lot of politicians. This, at least when it comes to campaign money, it's very, very common. The problem is, it's very much only focused on Republicans, especially in this case, Trump. And we know they've made it pretty clear why they're doing this. You've had some of the Democrats being pretty clear. They actually want this to happen so that they can actually have Trump gain more prominence in the primary. It seems to me before all this, Trump was very likely to lose against DeSantis in the primary. With this now, he is probably the front runner again, because a lot of people rightly will see it as, they're not just coming for Trump, they're really coming for Trump as a means to get to all of his voters or all conservatives in America. And when you consider the fact that they've been going after pro-life people for really just protesting, charging them for ridiculous crimes, when they're justifying, really, in many ways, the murders of six people, including three children in Nashville last week. When you consider all of that, it's pretty clear that this is not really just bias or partiality against Trump. It's a bias or partiality against people who are like Trump or who vote for Trump or conservatives. So on that, it's clear injustice. They're using this. I mean, you have also have the New York, New York, where you can have, there's so much rampant crime happening there. We all know this. You know, you have criminals being let go because of just how bad the entire system is. But yeah, when it comes to Trump, they're using this because, again, they know it will help them politically. So it's deeply concerning in that way. But it also concerns me that I don't know if I should say this, but if Trump were to be the nominee, obviously, I would say that, you know, Americans should vote for him over Joe Biden. You know, I can't vote yet. I don't have my citizenship yet, but it would not be good if Joe Biden were to win over Trump, if he were to become the nominee. But I also am concerned that the Democrats, what they want out of this will also happen, which is, because they're pursuing him politically, because it's unjust, a lot of people will then choose to vote for him over DeSantis, who I think is the better candidate, because they will see this as, well, then since they're coming after him, we therefore need to support him, including even in the primaries. So I think in many ways, the Democrats, as awful as they are, it's politically a very cunning move.
So just a few thoughts. So number one, I've been listening a lot about this story, and the payments were made from his personal bank account. And so, the allegations that this was a business expense, or that it might have to do with campaign funding, seem to be very, very very, very thin. And then the second thing, just as I've been listening a lot about this, you know, the reality of it is that the Hillary Clinton campaign created the Steele dossier that basically sent the whole world into the Russian collusion idea. And they did that out of campaign money, and they wrote down legal expenses. And so in the same state, in the same year, with a larger amount of money, you have the Democrats doing something far more politically dubious than what Trump is doing here. And so I appreciate you saying the one-sidedness. I think for me, the concern is twofold. The concern is, number one, it's a kangaroo court. And whenever we enter into the situations where we are attacking political opponents in a kangaroo court, you end up undermining freedom and freedom of speech and freedom of association. Yeah. You know, you think of all of the people who fled the narrative. You think of all the doctors, and you think of all of the police officers who just fled the discussion of whether or not their citizens of their country should be locked down or have mask face on force on their face. You just fled because the kangaroo courts still exist. And if you go against the kangaroo court, as a police officer, as a medical physician, or a pastor, or whatever, you face these attacks. And so I'm concerned about the kangaroo court. And then furthermore, I'm concerned about the fact that this will have a negative effect as to whether real crimes of politicians have their day in court, where you know, when you just start getting in, when you start using the law frivolously, then you have a struggle to use it with all of its strength and legal strength at a later time. So I'm concerned for both things as we talk about this. You know, for just talking about the political side of it, I think Trump did a fantastic job with his speech. And I would encourage all of our listeners to go listen to that speech, because Trump goes through, well, all the way back to 2016, he goes through all of the ways that the left has lied to the American people and to the world, really. And I found the speech, I found it actually not very self-centered. He was, of course, talking about himself throughout the whole thing, but whoever coached him in writing that speech, whoever wrote that for him, wanted to make sure that the people heard how every false narrative has come from the left towards the right, with the exception of mentioning the creation and the execution of COVID and how that was in and of itself an attack on the people. With the exception of that one thing, he goes through the historical, it's almost like a historical prologue of, look, they said this, this was the truth, and now the truth has proven itself. They said this, and he went through it, and I find that that's going to be helpful for Republicans and conservatives alike to be reminded, wow, look at the gaslighting we've walked through in the last 3 years. It's just been on full tilt.
Yeah, that's a great point. A lot of people have mentioned how unprecedented all of this is. But even then, it's not as big of a news as it should be. And that's because, as you said, as he said in his speech, that there has been so many steps leading up to this, so many things they've been doing against Trump and against Americans that and the world that has led to this very moment where they would do something like this, which is shocking. And yet, when you consider all the things that precede this, it's not surprising. I mean, Ben Shapiro has said many times about how this was inevitable, that this has been what the Democrats have been looking for years, right? Whether it was the Steele dossier, they have done, they've been doing whatever they can. Well, the two indictments, they've been trying to get Trump arrested for a long time. And now finally they've done it. Now on so many levels too, the problem here is this, is that one of the problems is it's, look, Republicans have failed to really pursue justice with Hillary Clinton and other Democrats in the past. So I'm not saying it's wrong for the Republicans to pursue Democrats who break the law. But the problem is, because of this precedent, you're now going to have Republicans who are also going to be a lot more tempted to retaliate. Not perhaps not for justice, but for politics. And that creates a more unstable democracy, where, being from Africa, I know this game very well, where it just leads to more and more corruption, and it just creates more and more of a mess. So it's deeply concerning that Democrats would do this. Now, again, it's not really surprising, but that they would do this just to gain more power, because that's all they really want, obviously, it's more and more power.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. We lived in Mozambique for just a year, and the difference between pursuing political gain and pursuing justice is truly staggering, right? That's why the West was built on a woman of justice who had blinds on, right? That biblical principle of impartiality, where you would go, no, that judge can't be that judge because they're so partial to the situation. That doesn't happen in corrupt countries where it is acceptable. It's kind of almost an acceptable behavior to just going back to Survivor, to just be the one who claws your way to the top. That's not, the West is supposed to say, no, the law stops you from doing that. The law stops you from doing anything. The law stands outside of your politics or outside of your personal ambitions, and the law holds you to a higher impartial standard that you can't circumvent. And here it just becomes so obvious that the law has been not able to do that in this situation. So, Samuel, talking about gaslighting at its best, we want to show our listeners a picture of the Ontario NDP urging legal protections for drag shows. And it's literally a picture. If you read CBC Toronto, the article says drag artists show protests at performances are negatively affecting their livelihoods. Okay, so there's a few things. The representation is that, number one, drag is art. And then number two, these performances are their income. And so those are two premises that would say performances are hurting protests are hurting them. Now, if I read it from an American outlet, this is the headline from the Daily Signal, and it is this: a wizard, a witch, and a drag queen and a child stand by a Canadian legislature who launches drag show protection bill. And I kid you not, folks, the American title is literal: a wizard, a witch. And you could say, weren't they the Klingons from Star Trek? A wizard, a witch, and a Klingon stand beside a Canadian legislature. So here we have MPP Kristen Wong Tam speaking at the podium and is introducing a private member's bill Tuesday that would allow the Attorney General to temporarily designate specific addresses as community safe zones. And that would then criminalize protesting these different performances.
I don't see the issue. It'd be just temporary.
You have to like look at this is what they go on to say. They say drag artists, their audiences, the businesses and facilities that host those drag performances have been put at risk. So they're almost trying to give as much privacy and protection. In fact, they're giving as much here as a local church would receive in Canadian criminal code, because you can't protest at a place of worship. You can't disrupt a place of worship. You know, they go on to talk about their reporting hate speech. Well, what is hate speech again? That's a boogeyman that people want to, you know, throw around very easily. But is it hate speech like, hey, stop grooming children to be overly sexual? Is that hate speech? You know, what do you got to say?
Nothing. I mean, in some ways, we are so used to the nonsense coming from our country. When I saw that, again, it wasn't that it was surprising or shocking. It was just saddening that you have this politician, yes, the NDP, but even the NDP 5 years ago, as radical as they were, you wouldn't think they'd be this radical so fast, or maybe 10 years ago. But for that to happen, and then for our media to, and then you had a little girl right next to all these people. And for us to take these people seriously is just saddening. But what's also interesting is it goes back to what you were saying earlier. They clearly know they can't win a debate. They know they can't. They know they can't convince anyone that grooming children is actually okay. Of course it's not. Therefore, since they can't convince people, since they can't convince parents, convince conservatives, but really it's like all four of us, you know, in Canada, but they can't convince people who are against this, which really would be most parents. Although we don't have a voice because the media continues to lie and demean us. So many people are just afraid to speak up. Nevertheless, because they know they can't convince us on this issue, they want to coerce us into agreeing with them, meaning they want to use the power of the law to say, if you disagree with us, or if you make it public that you disagree with us, you can become a criminal. And it goes back to what we were saying earlier as well, which is they claim they are oppressed. Therefore, they need to do this to protect them as minorities. But as the law clearly shows, they're actually oppressing others by doing this. They are the oppressors. They're not the oppressed, but they're claiming they're oppressed so they can use it as a weapon to oppress other people.
And even if we move out of the oppressed language, these people are obviously making an income on it. And they might say, well, do we make an income on it? Just like pastors make an income, you know, the people who in their community support them. We are talking about the sexualizing of children and the sexualizing of many individuals who are watching these things. You know, for example, Scarlett Boo Boo, a drag artist who has competed in Canada's Drag Race, said she has been subject to hate crimes and hate speech in recent weeks. Okay, so this is a guy cross-dressing to be a woman. So in the CBC, they actually use the pronoun she. So there's no oppression there. But this is what this person said. Drag is all about spreading love and acceptance and allows people to feel empowered and special. Drag artists and trans people have an inherent right to live freely and authentically in their truth. Now, that is the key to this entire situation. It's interesting. We have a lot of talk about pronouns, but we don't, when we talk about personal pronouns, but we don't really talk about relative pronouns or demonstrative pronouns very much. Their truth versus the definite article, the truth. So you're using a possessive article, a possessive pronoun, rather than using the definite article. And that is what this is all about. So if I were to go to this, this man and say, okay, so do you believe you can be a dragon? And he were to say, yes, he's saying, I have an intrinsic right. So you got to remember, and these words, intrinsic, inherent right, this is language that comes out of human rights language that was tethered to being created in God's image. This is to have an inherent right is because you have a level of value because you're a creature. But that does not mean it's not the same right to just do whatever you want to do. I cannot be violated according to someone else's preferences because I have a right, because I'm a created being. I have value in the eyes of God. That's different than an inherent right to live their truth. And Samuel, like, this is where, again, persuasion, we have to keep at it because their truth. Okay, so we're literally talking about someone saying, I have the right to live my truth. I'm going to fill in the head tiles, ready? I have the right to live my truth as a wizard. If I want to be Gandalf, by the way, are you watching the new Rings of Power at all?
No. I tried to watch. I couldn't get past the first episode or
two. Okay. Terrible. Slow moving, but you got to remember it's going to be multiple seasons and I've liked it. But I'm thinking of Gandalf the Wizard. That's called fiction. It's called fantasy. I have the inherent right as a wizard. I have the inherent right as a witch. I have inherent right. Like, it's just absurd. It's just absolute fantasy and absolute perversion. And the fact that this politician, Kristen Wong Tam, would, who herself uses pronouns like they, them, which again is plural and she's only singular, it is just legislating falsehood. And again, so for common sense people, so for people who go, and when I say common sense, it's not so common anymore, but for people who look at the created order, they look at the world around them, they look at the anatomy. Sam, we just did a show on this. I hope you are able to share this show out and our other show, the Other Club, when we show this one. We just did a show on the difference between Kentucky laws and the Canadian Bill C-4, because Canada is codifying fantasy. It's codifying fantasy.
Yep.
The Klingons have arrived and they want to be treated like Klingons.
Yeah. I immediately think of what the Bible says about the fool. The fool says there is no God. Once you say that, you make yourself open to a completely different reality as a society. If a society says we are not going to live by God's rules or God's standards, then you then are saying you live in a universe where there is no God. And a universe with no God is a universe with no truth, with no reality. So they really do live in a different reality from you and I, which is obviously deeply concerning for their own lives. But then for us, it means then that they need, because then we are invading their reality. Their fantasies being ruined by our existence. Therefore, just as there is no God in their reality, then they need to cancel us so that we can be part of their reality either. So that whole law is really, as you said, they have this fantasy island and they want every single ship that would want to come into that island to be stopped immediately so they can continue to live in their fantasy. And it is, you know, it's quite horrific. So this whole thing about living their truth, my truth, it's really the same thing as, you know, since they're saying that I have my own truth that's different from yours, then I also have a different definition of what a woman is, what a man is. All that stuff is all intertwined. So they have a different meaning of reality, a different meaning of truth, different meaning of a man, a woman, a marriage, a baby. All these things are all intertwined because our society has rejected that there is only one reality, only one truth, with only one God.
The other side that I want to bring up on this is when you and I would look at this and we just look up the get up, and again, it's a wizard that looks weird. So these are maybe some of the most conservative costumes that we've seen, least sexual costumes that we've seen, where you actually quite see overtly sexual costumes in other areas. This is a competitor in the Canadian drag show whereby the Prime Minister of Canada walked in, and as he was walking out, was catcalled and said, "I like the view of you walking out better than I did of you walking in." Like, we are talking about the entire show is overly sexualized, and now they're trying to go out and speak to children. And so this is, of course, trying to groom children and pervert children and harm their minds. And groom them for a lifestyle where their boundaries and their guardrails are down and changed around. So the very individual who's saying, "Look, you can't protest this. There's nothing wrong with this. We're not really trying to groom children," literally has been on shows talking sexually to our prime minister. They go on to say that one of the drag artists from Guelph, wow, that's the city that I grew up in, primarily does shows for ages 19 and up. But after doing a few all-age shows, she was targeted for harassment, first online, then in person, and she described it as an organized campaign. You mean parents saying, if you want to do stuff as adults, we disagree with you, but at least you're doing this in a bar that's for adults versus trying to tempt our children into this?
It's quite remarkable that we're now living in a society where we are branded as hateful. We are branded as evil people, as bigots, because we're saying, "Hey guys, we should not groom and sexualize children." That's where we are at in our society. You know, I was reading the book of Genesis recently, and in light of what's been happening, I read, I'm forgetting what chapter it is in Genesis, but the chapter where it talks about Lot. I don't want to even try to figure out the chapter. I'm going to forget. But where with Lot, when he is in Sodom and Gomorrah and all these people are pursuing him and the angels, it's quite remarkable. When I read that text, I knew, obviously, I understood what was happening. But in light of what's happening in our society today, I see that with a different light, which is basically there's nothing truly new under the sun. It's the exact same thing. Not only do they want our agreement, not only do they want us to support their lifestyle, the LGBTQ people, they want us to participate and our children to participate in their sin. And these activists, the mob, they will stop at nothing until they get what they want. So either our culture will completely submit to them, or there will be repentance and they will submit to Christ. Or judgment.
No, and I'm glad you said that, Samuel, because I think that this is where people get confused, where they want to accept all things for the sake of friendship and unity. I was just in a tweeting conversation with this the other day, and I said, "Truth divides and unifies." And someone says, "Well, so does false certainty." and just another pastor who won't ever say anything publicly of meaning. He just likes to sit around when you say something and try to find holes. But the offer to these men who are dressing like women is you can repent, you can change, you can be transformed by the renewing of your mind, and you would actually be welcomed into our community. And maybe they're saying the same thing. Maybe they're saying, well, you can repent and you can change and you can be transformed by the renewing of your mind to do what we want you to do, and then you'd be welcomed into our community. I think for me, it is the object of our trust in our faith, and mine is in the Lord Jesus Christ and his word. And it really is a battle of worldviews, and whereby, you know, our free and lawful society might be more permissive for them to be able to do things in the dark and privately that we don't know about, where they are going to try to root us out and attempt to eradicate the opposition. You know, hold them. You can't even criticize anymore. You can't talk about it. You got to stay away. And again, this is another bill, and I need to read this correctly, but this is another bill. The bill would allow the Attorney General to temporarily designate addresses such as where the show is taking place. Oh, wait, the community library, by the way, tax-funded library, as community safe zones, and intimidation or hate speech within 100 meters of it would be subject to a $25,000 fine. So we are talking about, you know, again, another weighty bill, another weighty measure. And I really, really hope that the bill is not considered and is thrown out. Mm. All right, so let's just do a quick summary. Let's just do a fun little wrap up here, Sam. Survivor, people change. We're so glad that it is not the survival of the fittest, but our world is much more, the world that God has created is much more beneficial and much more benevolent than I just have to survive and backstab everybody. Trump, we're worried about all the gaslighting that's been happening and that this is all just gaslighting and that the Republicans might retaliate, and you brought it up, and we might find that the U.S. is more like an African continent in political warfare of the courts, which we both say that seriously. We've been there. You do not want that. You don't want yeah. that.
Yeah.
And then when we're talking about these new drag show protections, man, again, it is a Canadian living in a fantasy world, trying to force fantasy over reality by law in Canada. And so heavy topics today. What do you want to leave our listeners with knowing about you?
About me? As you know, you and I have had some talks about this. There's, people know me perhaps on social media as Slow to Write. They know my blog, slowtowrite.com. But I'm also working on a podcast. By the time this particular episode is available, they will have access to the podcast. So that podcast will be Slow to Speak. I figure Slow to Write, now that I'm having a podcast where I'll be talking instead of writing, it makes sense to make it Slow to Speak. So, which is obviously also a direct reference to James 1:19. So, so the podcast, I'm working on that. I'm looking forward to that. It would be an exciting way to perhaps have more connections with people. Because I know, especially these days, people still do read blogs, but podcasting is seemingly the way of the future in many ways. So why not make my own podcast as well, too, and emulate your path as well, too.
Well, that's a very kind thing to say. We are glad that you're joining the podcasting world. I can't wait to give it a listen. We hope that you and I will be going back and forth on each other's work a little bit in the future. And so that this will be exciting for us. So you'll have to have me on unless your format's just like you talking for an hour, which you'd probably get away with. You probably do okay. So.
Oh, I'm not sure if I can do that. I will be, since the beginning, it'll probably be about 10, 15 minutes of just certain topics. And then slowly I'll try to make it an hour maybe of talking and then have guests on as well too, including yourself.
Oh, that's great. Okay. Well, everybody go follow Samuel over on Twitter at Slow to Write and follow his sign up for his newsletter. We appreciate Samuel. And when I say we, I mean at Liberty Coalition Canada. I mean with some of the other think tank groups that I'm a part of. Like the Ezra Institute, we appreciate Samuel. He's been strongly pro-life, and he is a great voice to help analyze critical race theory. And so we've appreciated you, Samuel, in that. So everybody, as we move forward all together, trying to help Christians think through these tumultuous times, Sam's going to be a great asset. So Samuel, thanks for coming on. Everyone, thanks for listening. Would you make sure that you share this podcast around and give us a 5-star rating? Please, if you've got people who are confused about all of these different headlines today, Sam and I kind of went into some of them. So make sure that people are hearing about this type of Christian contemporary analysis, long form discussions. You can hear us. Muddle through sentences and make mistakes, and you can hear us articulate our thoughts by having to think back and forth with one another, which is what good dialogue is about. So go, and we really need your support. So go over to christianweek.org. That's the organization that helps partner with libertycoalitioncanada.com to produce this podcast. We really appreciate all of your support. Thanks for listening. Godspeed.